And now, the starting lineup for your 2013 Seattle Supersonics!
At small forward, de la República Dominicana, número 32, Francisco García! At guard, number 13, former Rookie of the Year, Tyree Gibbons! At forward, Rider University graduate standing 6 feet 11 inches tall, number 34, Jason Thompson! Starting at center, he's bad, he's ugly, he's just plain freak nasty, number 15, DeMarcus Cousins! And now, hailing from Seattle, Washington, University of Washington product, he's cold-blooded, number 22, Isaiah Thomas!
Whoa, Rob, that was epic. So epic, I actually started to feel pangs of sympathy for the many loyal fans of the Sacramento Kings. On the off chance any one of them is forced to listen to that for some reason. To that poor kidnapped soul, all I can say is I'm sorry and I know what it feels like. I've been through it recently. Well, not the kidnapping part. But anyway, to all the rest of my basketball friends, welcome to the Teardrop Runners. This is a weekly podcast about analytics in the NBA, hosted by four old friends and non-experts who are trying to learn and tinker with the tools of NBA analytics. We're also from Seattle. So, at the risk of jinxing it, we've got something on our minds today, the Sacramento Kings. Despite the inevitable lawsuits, it seems the Kings will soon be moving to Seattle and turning into your new Seattle Sonics. This week, we're going to try to break that team down a little bit, just scratching the surface of what is, I'm sure, to be a doomed love affair. I'm your host, Scott, in what is, according to Football Results and Ray Lewis, the greatest city in the world, Baltimore, Maryland. And with us, as always, are...
I'm BZ. I'm in the Barclays Center.
Chris Brown, otherwise known as Swaggy B. In Gaithersburg.
Gaithersburg, Maryland. A dangerous state to be booing the Ravens.
Yeah, true, true.
Hey, guys.
Rob, the Kings, are they coming to Seattle? How official is it? What's the stadium situation?
We are in a very good spot right now. Since the sale is over, we have the team. We have an arena in place. The only way, we're just waiting for the NBA to approve it. And I'm not going to lie, they had no problem approving the OKC thing. The fact, even if Sacramento gets money, they don't have an arena. And even if they get money in arena, which is pretty much near impossible, I still think it's going to go through. So we're sitting pretty right now. We have a sweet stadium coming our way, and we have a really bad basketball team coming our way. So get excited, Seattle.
Yeah.
There's no better way to start a Seattle sports team, Sounders being the exclusion.
And the Pilots.
The Pilots, that's right. Yeah, but the Pilots turned into Mariners, and the Mariners turned into a lifetime of heartbreak. So everybody won.
No, remember that time they made the World Series?
That was cruel, Rob. It was cruel for someone from Seattle to do that.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
I would expect that from a Boston person.
It's going to be exciting. We're up almost up to 40 years of futility with the Mariners. It's right around the corner.
Yeah. Get excited, everybody.
Celebrations downtown.
Yeah, that's right.
Celebrate 40 years.
All right. Well, let's get into the next substantive topic that doesn't involve singing. Salaries and the salary cap. Menzel, can you kind of break down the salary situation this year and going forward for the team that's coming here?
Yeah, I mean, there's some good news and some bad news in terms of their contract situation. The good news is they don't have any big albatross contracts weighing them down going forward. The bad news is in the short term, they don't have any flexibility, well, not much flexibility coming up this current offseason. They've got cap holds we're going to have to worry about with Tyreke Evans and James Johnson, who are both going to be restricted free agents. They have got an extension that Aaron Brooks is very likely to pick up for $3.5 million. So in terms of guys coming off the books this year, it's really limited to just Francisco Garcia, who is the team option for $6.4 million going into the 2013 season, which, I mean, my Spidey sense tells me that the team will not want to pick that option up.
That's a good Spidey sense, Manzo.
Yeah, agreed.
The roster is so marginal, though, that they might have to pick him up.
No, they do not.
No, sir.
I don't know.
There are ways around this.
It's called not signing him.
Yep.
Yeah. So...
are there any, Menzel, let me ask you this question. Are there any egregious contracts on this team right now? I mean, obviously you mentioned that, you know, he's obviously a little overpaid. Are there any albatross contracts on this team?
They have a couple long-term contracts, so they still have Marcus Thornton for two more seasons after this one for $16.5 million, $16.6 million for those next 2 years. They have Chuck Hayes at another $12 million or so for the next two seasons. And then they have Jason Thompson locked up for another 4 years at actually a pretty good rate. He's going to make $6 million a year effectively over the next three seasons with a unguaranteed fifth year on his contract.
So do you consider any of those to be onerous contracts, Menzel?
None of them are onerous, especially given that, you know, the Thornton and Hayes contracts will turn into expiring contracts at some point in the near future and not long-term future, and at that point they should be able to maybe dump those off somehow. So no, they're not locked into anybody at $10 million a year that is riding the pine. They still haven't used their amnesty clause, so if Thornton or Hayes are coming up the works for them to make a bigger move, then those can be dealt with.
Although probably they can get value for some of those guys, and if they are involved in any trades, they don't have any super high-paid players, so if they're looking for any kind of big piece, they can paste a couple of these contracts together and get something.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing to be too worried about contract-wise with this team. You know, the longer-term contracts are all at pretty good rates. You know, Thomas Robinson on his rookie deal, of course, and Jason Thompson, who, like I said, is, you know, $6 million a year for a really solid guy, you know, is not going to hurt any team.
Do you think that Thornton contract is a problem? You know, he's stinking it up this year. You know, he wasn't terrible the 2 years previous. I'm wondering if that's a contract they may want to amnesty.
Well, I'm going to have to call spoiler alert here because Menzel is going to be scouting Marcus Thornton in a few minutes. Okay. But Menzel, what do you think? Is that a bad contract?
It's their worst contract. He's still $8 million a year, so he's not eating up the team's cap room.
Yeah. It's not a Rashard Lewis, Gilbert Arenas type contract.
Right.
Yeah. It's the worst of a very, you know, modest bunch of contracts. If you're just talking contract wise only in the situation going forward, most teams would rather be in the King's shoes right now. Yeah, just to give you guys a quick rundown of kind of the other guys they have on contract for this season and what they're paying them. So there's Tyreek, who's going to be a restricted free agent at the end of this season. He's at $5.2 million. DeMarcus Cousins, who will be restricted at the end of next season, he's getting $3.8 this year and $4.9 next year. Thomas Robinson, rookie deal, is slotted at $3.3. Aaron Brooks is $3.2. And then they have Travis Outlaw on the team, who was amnestied from the Nets, and they just picked him up on a 3-year, $9 million deal, which was probably a little bit high for him, but again, it's an overall low number.
Yeah, I mean, if Aaron Brooks is your worst contract at $6 million for this year and next year, then you don't have a really bad contract, because that's not a disastrous contract by any stretch.
I agree.
And they do also have Isaiah Thomas for two more years for $5 million.
The cute Isaiah.
The thing that's kind of interesting looking at the contract situation of the Kings is that they have remarkably little cap room, given the fact that they don't have any, you know, they have very few veteran players. They don't have anyone that would basically fit the status of a superstar, and yet they somehow managed to use almost every bit of their cap room up this year.
Right, they're under the cap by just about 120 grand.
I don't know.
Yeah.
How did they manage to do that?
They have a lot of guys making between 5 and 8 million.
They've got a bunch of slightly overpaid guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's fixable.
I mean, I actually think the Travis Outlaw contract is worse than the Aaron Brooks contract because it goes through 2014-15.
Longer. Yeah. And there's no getting out of that one either.
I mean, everyone's tradable.
Can they amnesty him again?
No.
As Michael Corleone said in The Godfather Part 2, if history has taught us anything, it's that anyone can be traded.
The one limitation of the amnesty clause is that it had to be a contract that you had
prior to the signing of the CBA.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get into talking about the guys that signed those contracts. Each of us picked a couple of players that we've been keeping track of over the previous week. We're going to go around the horn, a phrase that I am allowed to use. I checked with ESPN's lawyers, and do one at a time. Who wants to start us off?
Me.
All right, Rob, who did you have this week?
I had two guys, Tyreek and Thomas Robinson. I'll start with Tyreek because he's probably the most interesting piece of their roster. As I said, he is the former Wookiee of the Year. He's shown a lot of promise, Memphis product. He's only 23 years old. He's in his fourth season right now. He's shooting a lot less, and he's shooting a lot better this year. After his rookie year, everyone started becoming kind of down on him because he was performing worse by the year. But this year, he is, per 36, he is having a career year in rebounds, steals, blocks, turnover rate, not quite there in assists, points is second best since his rookie year. So, you know, he's back in a sense. He started out 45% field goal percent from the field, then 40, and then 45 again, and now he's at 47. So he's doing a lot better, and most of that improvement has been in three-point shooting. I know he's got a great stroke, but if you look at his numbers, his three-point percentage has been really bad. It was 25, mm-hmm. 29, 20, and now it's at 36.
So that's a pretty crazy jump. I mean, you're just, you know, if you didn't know anything about this player and I showed you those 3 years and then this year, you would assume right away that he was going to regress to the mean at some point relatively soon, right?
Yeah. But I don't think, I mean, he'll regress a little, but I don't think he'll regress much. I think he'll be able to hang around 34-35% just from watching him play. The guy can shoot the ball.
His attempts are way down also. So, you know, I think it's a matter of taking better shots.
Well, it's not really that far down. He's attempting 1.5 shots a game instead of 1.6 last year. So
I see his career attempts per game is 1.9. So yeah. He's down like a third.
Down a little. Yeah. But
more like a fourth.
A fourth, yeah. Whatever.
Could be a fifth.
Yes, I'm very impressed with him thus far. I think he's you know, as Gotta said before, he's a very strong, powerful guy. He's one of two players I think I would like to keep going forward. So, you know, what do you guys think?
He's got a pretty bad rap, right? I mean, what do you say to his critics? It seems like he's got a lot of haters.
This year, plus minus, negative 0.7. Last year, plus minus, negative 2.6. The year before that, plus 1.7. The year before that, minus 5.3. So he has shown, in my view, that he's not good. So every year, almost every year,
yeah, but Chris, we've talked about this. This is stupid. You can't just do that. You can't just say, you know, his plus minus is bad when he's been playing on a really bad team for that long. Everybody on the team is minus.
He's
they're always
like
going to be
bad. The worst
back.
Player on one of the worst teams in the league.
Okay, well, we had this discussion before the season.
They have a lot worse players on the team than him.
Yeah,
statistically, they are.
Well, so that's, I mean, that in some ways that sums up the knock on Tyreek, right? Because he's certainly shown himself to be a very inefficient player. And in his early seasons, he had a tendency to hold on to the ball for a long period of the shot clock. He still does that from time to time, although he does it less. And, you know, basically everyone said he was playing one-on-one ball. Do you see that having changed this year, Rob?
A little bit. I mean, he's asked to do a lot less this year. I would say yes to answer your question. He's getting fewer minutes. He's got, you know, he's a little bit more weapons, you know, obviously with Boogie. IT is playing better. Jimmer's even having a better season. Still likes the one-on-one game, and he's asked to do a lot with the last few seconds of the shot clock. The way they run their offense, they don't really do much for the first 10 seconds. And then the shot clock's down, and they look to Boogie, or they look to him. So there's a lot of times where he has to force stuff up there. He's talented enough to make things happen every now and then.
I also will say in his defense that I think, you know, and again, one of the knocks on him is that his focus isn't there. But when he focuses, he's one of the best one-on-one wing defenders out there. I mean, He's just a tremendously strong and rangy defender. I really love watching him play defense, especially on traps when he's really working. So, you know, I do see some of his value coming from that. And I do see him, you know, I obviously no one would argue that Tyreek has been a impact player like a Kyrie Irving. But I think the raw skill is still there and the basketball IQ is rising. So a lot of people wonder if the ceiling is worth the risk. I mean, he seems to have a pretty high ceiling at this point with his athleticism.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, he's 23 and he's getting better. So that's definitely something to think about. If Hollinger had him marked as a shooting guard instead of a point guard, He would be fifth in his per rating of all shooting guards in the league. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a good player. I completely disagree with you, Chris.
Yeah, I'm 180 degrees against you guys on this one. So, I mean, this...
I'm 360 on you both.
Yeah.
That's 540 for the listeners.
I think he's got a very strong, at this point, statistical track record that we can look at. And he's just shown himself, you know, I don't know why he sucks, but he sucks. I mean,
Chris, you've watched him play, though. You can see the gifts. You can see the skill in the speed with which he gets to the basket and the, like, ferocity of some of his defense. You see what people are looking
at. Yeah, he's got a great body. I mean, like, he looks like the way I imagine a great basketball player should look, you know?
Well, I'd say he often plays, you know, in spurts the way a great basketball player should play, too. The issue is that he just doesn't sustain it. You're right. You know, it results in terrible stats. I think anyone deciding on whether they want Tyreek on their team going forward is asking themselves whether that upside is worth the risk that he presents of being essentially a ball hog and a black hole on offense.
But a per of 17-6-4 with 76 free throw percentage and 47 field goal percentage is not terrible stats.
No, it's
like
not.
Chris
You're
is
right.
taking all of this from plus minus, which is not fair when you play on a bad basketball team.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. Although I think some of that plus minus problem comes from his lack of focus on defense. I mean, I'm saying he's a great defender, but the caveat there is when he focuses.
Yeah,
I mean, I can't judge guys being like, oh, you know, he focused for like a 5 minute stretch and then
no one is saying that you can judge it that way. Everyone is in agreement that he's a problematic player. What we're all saying is some of us think he might be worth the risk, but no one is arguing that he's a consistently great player 48 minutes a night.
Just to put the question to you guys real quick and bring it around on Tyreek. So he's going into free agency this summer. He's going to get by law at least $7 million, and someone will probably want to pay him 45 for 4 years. Where would you sign him if you're going to re-sign him to your team? How much money?
3 years, $20 million.
I'm going to predict Chris's answer is going to be 0 years, 0 million.
Chris is zero.
No, I mean, actually, I would sign him, you know, probably to that same contract that Rob just said, like 3 and 20.
But if he's statistically a terrible player, why would you do that? Why would you spend $20 million on a guy that's statistically terrible, Chris?
Well, you hope he gets better. I mean, like you said, the ceiling is high.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you're right. I mean, like, you know, his history shows that he's not – you know, he has not been good the last 3 years, but you hope at some point it clicks. You know, I don't know when that'll happen. I kind of think in the NBA, you know, where everybody's making a ton of money, a 3 year, $20 million contract isn't that big of a gamble. It's, put it this way, it's the type of contract that if it turns out to be, he turns out to totally suck, you can put him on the end of the bench and kind of forget about him.
Right, right. Well, yeah. I don't know if that's a realistic contract to expect for him, but we will see.
It wouldn't be. I mean, I think he'll get paid more than that, is my guess.
Somebody will want him at the top end of the market.
Yeah.
Nick Batum level money.
The beginning of the year, you guys said nobody would pay for him. All three of you guys said that.
Yeah, that was before we saw this half of the season.
Okay.
I also had a player I was scouting this week. My first player is one of the most popular college players in recent memory, Jimmer Fredette. I have seen him play once in person, actually, when he was in college in the tournament. I wasn't a huge fan, but I had to agree that he was great at creating shots for himself and seemingly being able to score from anywhere on the floor with a pretty quick release. When I watch him now, he struggles to do that in the NBA. He's really not big enough, strong enough, or quick enough to make that happen. His shot is still very good, but you know, he's not getting the kind of looks that he got in college. He's not getting the kind of space that he got in college. You know, his shooting numbers are okay. His true shooting percentage is 554. His effective field goal percentage is 494. So, you know, nothing eye-popping there. You know, he occasionally gets decent open looks. They're usually, though, in the kind of middle of the court. Usually gets them in the paint. Chris, you and I were watching this game the other day. Do you even remember seeing Jimmer take the floor?
I don't, actually.
Yeah, I mean, most of his appearances are not very memorable. I think he's had a couple of big games, but when he's out there, I don't see him as much of an impact player.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I got a question for you, Scott. Do you think that he can play the point? Because, I mean, he's a good shooter. I mean, I have a lot of confidence in his ability to knock down open jumpers from outside. Kind of what I've seen with him, though, is that he just doesn't quite have the size to shoot over guys very easily as a two guard. My thought is that he's, you know, if he's going to see the court much in the NBA, he's going to have to play some point.
I don't disagree with that. I mean, I think especially for establishing matchups,
yeah,
it's probably better for him to play the point. And, you know, given the fact that he's coming off the bench, I think that's reasonable. I still think you run plays where you get the ball out of his hand pretty quickly and run a screen for him. You know, yeah, he can run the point.
Okay.
You know, I think nowadays I don't think it matters all that much who brings the ball up the floor. Although, you know, I don't know how well he's going to respond to a trap in the corner when he's bringing the ball up against a team like, obviously this is a harsh example about Miami.
Yeah.
Who knows? I don't think that's going to be the case. I don't see a situation where LeBron and Wade are trying to jam Jimmer up in the corner. That's not a matchup you're going to see very often.
Manziel, what's his contract like?
He is on his rookie deal, so he's slotted in. 2.3 this year, 2.5 next year, and a team option for 3.1 in 2014-2015, which basically would have to be picked up before next season starts.
So would you pick that up?
I would. You know, he's shooting over 400 from three-point land. He's shooting 90% from free throw line. You know, in the limited amount that I've seen him, he is a reasonable kind of entry passer. And I think, you know, if it's a team that can really focus on getting more three-point attempts for him, then, you know, I think you could get a lot of value. And, like, you know, I was thinking about Steve Novak earlier. He's another guy who's almost a peer three-point specialist and very helpless defensively. And his contract is much bigger, so I would lean very strongly to pick that up.
Steve Novak's really good, though.
He's also 6'10". So, I mean, this is one of the issues, actually. That's a great transition point. Thank you, Manziel, for the great transition. You know, Jimmer, you know, what Steve Novak's good at is taking the threes from the corner. I mean, that's his bread and butter.
Yeah.
The same thing that Ray Lewis is good at and Ray Allen and Rashard Lewis are both good at. They're one person in my mind now. That's
right.
Ray Lewis. No, you just got Baltimore in your mind.
I got Baltimore brain. Anyway, you know, those guys are all tall, and Jimmer's not tall.
Yeah, I
like
know.
It's hard to get a lot of corner shots when you're as tall as Jimmer is. And in fact, he's only taken 5.2% of his shots from the corners. Now, for a shooter like Jimmer, that's where you want him to be, but I think they're having a lot of trouble getting him the ball there.
Yeah.
I don't know how hard they're trying, but it's not happening. Another, this isn't exactly an analytics number, but another thing to note for this franchise going forward is that he increased merchandise sales by 540% when he joined the team last year. So he has some marketing value, I would say.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Mormons in the Pacific Northwest. A lot of Mormons. People will be excited when this team moves to Seattle. You know, you don't think there's a lot of kids all around the Oklahoma area, whatever. I don't know what states are around Oklahoma, Hawaii. I'm not a geography major. I'm sure they're excited. Manziel, you are also scouting somebody this week. Who do you want to start with?
I was scouting the very poor man's LaMarcus Aldridge, Jason Thompson.
Very, very poor.
He's a guy whose, I think, NBA rep has gone from back in the milk carton to a guy a lot of people are maybe a little more interested in this year and in the last half of last year. So basically 6'11 power forward slash center with a pretty legit offensive game, but he's...
What is that offensive game?
Well, I mean, he's an interior scorer. More of a basing the basket scorer than pure post guy,
mm-hmm.
who backs somebody down. For a guy his size and with his skills, the skills do include, you know, some dribbling in the open court, passing the ball, shooting. He's actually a pretty poor outside shooter. Once you get past about 5 feet from the rim, he turns into a really bad shooter.
Mm-hmm. So he's not the kind of big man that you're going to be able to have step out for, you know, the kind of signature Kevin Garnett 12-footers.
Yeah, but he's a big man who kind of wants to do that.
Or the LaMarcus Aldridge.
No, he doesn't. He does not want to shoot jumpers from outside.
I mean, he wants to shoot shorter.
But Manziel, let's just back up. Manziel, what is it that leads you to believe that Jason Thompson wants to shoot jumpers?
Well, I mean, I had a very unrewarding time Googling Jason Thompson highlights.
Okay.
You know, I'm just looking at his shot chart, and, you know, he's got a lot of shots at the rim where he converts at a pretty good rate, but he also has almost as many shots from 3 to 9 feet where he converts at a poor 47% chance, and then 10 feet out, he's in the low 30s. You know, so, you know, he's a guy who has a good-looking shot, but he really should never be shooting that. He's very good on offensive rebounds and very good at finishing right at the rim. Chris, you'd hate him because he can't jump.
Yeah.
But he seems to have a little bit of this ability to shoot the ball kind of on the way down, you know, figure out ways to get the ball up on the rim and hope it rolls in.
I have a question for Scott.
Okay.
It looks like he actually, his outside shot is just fine on the right side of the court. You've watched the most Kings games or a Sonics game, sorry, pardon my French. Do you think that he might have a decent jumper because he's comfortable on that side? Is that something that maybe Sir Keith Smart should take advantage of, keeping him over there? Or is this just kind of dumb luck because it's a small sample size? It's probably something in the range of 17 for 38-ish from my...
It's definitely a small sample size. I agree with Manziel that he's got a pretty good-looking shot. You know, he's a young, big man, and... That's not, it doesn't need to be part of his game right now. You know, he's not someone that they need that out of right now. I mean, he's ideally, you know, if he's going to be an elite player, he would get that shot, but they don't need him to take that shot right now, at least in my opinion. The fact that he can't take that shot, though, sometimes impacts their spacing with DeMarcus, and sometimes has a tendency to crowd the paint.
And DeMarcus likes to play from the elbow so much. That's Zach Lowe pointed out today.
That's right. We're gonna actually talk about that a little bit later when we get into the tactics section. Manziel, you said earlier that Jason Thompson's contract was pretty reasonable, although it's one of the longest term contracts on the team. He signed through the 2016-2017 season. Is that a good contract?
You know, I do think so. You know, if you're looking at a future of a three big man rotation with Cousins and Thomas Robinson, then for a guy who's probably going to play minutes both at the power forward and center position, there'll be enough minutes to justify $6 million a year. He's not an unskilled guy, you know, so there's still some room for growth. He'll basically be ending that contract at age 29 or 30, which is a great time to end a contract on a guy. You know, and he's also been very durable over the years, I think. Let me look here. He played every game his rookie year, 75 games the next two, missed two games last year, and has played, I think, every game this season. So, you know, it doesn't look like an injury risk either.
Right.
So, Manziel, would you rather have, like, a combo of Thompson and Thomas Robinson, you know, maybe $6 and $4 million respectively, or, like, David West, LaMarcus Aldridge, like, one guy that's more, because you said combo, and I find that interesting in the sense that, yeah, maybe in terms of value it's pretty good, but this team needs a player who, one, is going to get double teamed. You know, I think that's part of what Jimmer's, you know, where Jimmer is lacking success. You know, they're not able to rotate the ball because there aren't too many double teams that come down, though, because they're not too much of a threat. You know, they're undersized big guys in terms of Thompson and Boogie.
No. I don't know if I'd call Boogie undersized.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
He's not a 7-footer, but yeah.
He's got enough power. He can get. He should be able to get deep position whenever he feels like it.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get to this in a minute, but he's a pretty dominant isolation center.
You know, with the way the league is going in terms of the size of your front court players, you know, I do like his contract. He has to be part of a rotation. You know, he's not going to be the centerpiece guy.
No, I was just saying, would you rather have him and Thomas Robinson, or would you rather have, like,
no,
David West? Because that's like
David
an equivalent.
Oh, man.
Don't like that David West.
All right, let's... This is a perfect time to end this conversation and cycle back to the first part of the horn. Rob, who's your next player?
Who? I have Thomas Robinson.
Oh, perfect. See what I did?
God did that, Scott. God did that.
Thomas Robinson was the fifth overall pick. He's out of Kansas. He is also young. He's only 21. He was an 18 and 12 guy. He screwed my bracket up, but I've forgiven him since then. And I really like this guy. I don't understand what Keith Smart is doing in terms of his minutes, because he will go a game where he'll play 28 minutes and then he'll go a game where he plays 0 minutes or 1 minute. And I just don't get it. I really think they're better with him on the floor. Maybe I'll have to have Chris look up those numbers. But I just think, you know, there's with him and Tyreek, those are two, you know, and maybe IT as well. They're so young, and I think that there's a lot of potential there. The sky is the limit, you know. With Jason Thompson, I like him, but I know he's young, but I think he is what he is. He doesn't have that shot. He doesn't have, you know, I don't know, that killer instinct. But I think, I really like Thomas Robinson. His numbers are good. He's sitting at about 11 and 10 per 36. He's shooting all right. He's a bad free throw shooter. He's 57% from the stripe. But he was closer to 64 or 65, I believe, in college. He is only playing, let's see, what is he playing? He's playing 16 minutes a game. And that's, like, really misleading, because sometimes he will play the 30 minutes and sometimes he'll play nothing. I think it's a really poor choice by Keith Smart. I don't know if he's just know, having trouble finding minutes for him with the good play of Jason Thompson. But I think, you know, with a team that's young and clearly not going to the playoffs, I think you need to throw him in there and really just see what he has, because you're going to have to sign him to a contract soon, and we're going to need to know how much he's worth. So, he's making another $3 million this year, 3.3, 3.5 next year, with options of 3.6 and 4.6 the following years. So, Manziel, do you think that's something that they'll take up on?
Guaranteed. 100 bazillion thousand percent they're picking up both option years on his contract unless he gets terrifically hurt.
I agree.
I mean, Thomas Robinson in some ways seems like a somewhat forgotten player right now, and I think you're probably right that that's because Keith Smart kind of jerks around with his minutes. But he's someone that you very rarely hear talked about, in kind of the general podcast world and on the NBA blogs. He's just not a very popular player. Do you think that he is all that potential still there to be a, you know, very good player?
Yeah, I don't think he'll... I mean, it would be a stretch to say that he's an all-star type potential, but he's definitely a very effective player that I think will be a legit starter in the NBA in a couple of years.
Yeah, I think maybe the concern with Robinson is that, you know, he was a three-year college player, so he should have probably come into the league maybe a little bit more prepared. You know, the Kings are worse defensively and offensively when he's on the court.
Chris, hit us with the plus-minus.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's got a negative 3.3 on the season. You know, that's not, even on the Kings, that's not good. But you know, I'm kind of with Rob on this. I really liked him. I loved him in college. I loved him when they picked him in the first round. I thought it was a steal, actually, that he fell to the Kings.
That's five.
So, I mean, I couldn't believe he fell down. He fell that far. So, I mean, I don't know what the hell's going on. He should be getting more PT. This guy's like the future in my view. I mean, my question, you know, for Rob would be, you know, say Cousins was out of the picture. Do you think that, Robinson would be able to pair with Thompson in the front court? Or is that front court with those two guys just not have the size to basically play together in the NBA?
To answer your question, yes, I think they could pair, in terms of having it, you know, look, the goal is to win an NBA championship. I don't think that that pair is really a foundation to do that, let alone, like, even them with Kevin Durant is still a stretch, in my mind. They can handle their own. The way Sacramento's gonna, like, right now, the way they're gonna win is by playing dirty, you know, just ugly games. they're not, yeah, sorry, maybe not playing dirty, but they're going to win ugly games. They're usually going to be playing a team that is better than them in many aspects of the game. They need to play really, really tough defense and kind of be scrappy on offense to, you know, pick up some easy buckets to win.
And can he contribute to that?
Absolutely, 100%.
It's funny because, you know, when I watch the games, and I've probably seen six or seven Kings games this season, although certainly my attention fades out sometimes out of self-preservation.
About 4 minutes in that first quarter, right?
Yeah, that's right. But, you know, it's hard for me to remember
anything. 4 minutes in the first
anything...
quarter when they go down by 20 points.
Yeah, they love going down early. It's hard for me to remember anything that Thomas Robinson has done, you know, and that's something that, you know, maybe that's just because I'm lazy and I'm not watching very carefully. But, you know, he's not been a very impactful rookie from a kind of a eyeball point of view. And maybe that is just a minutes issue right now. Yeah. All right, Chris, who's your next player?
So we talked about this guy last week quite a bit, so I'm not going to get into a great amount of detail with him. But Isaiah Thomas is a guy that I really like, kind of as a almost cornerstone of the franchise moving forward. So Isaiah, of course, is famous for, he's the second year player who last year was the last guy picked in the second round. So he was the last guy drafted.
Lucky number 60, baby. Yeah.
And, you know, he's really outperformed his draft position so far. So he's on the year this year, he's actually plus 4.5 in raw plus minus. Last year he was plus 7.3. In raw plus minus. His adjusted plus minus last year was where was he? Isaiah Thomas was plus .63. So he was.
And Chris, for the folks that are, we've been talking about this for a while, so I apologize to any new listeners because we're using plus minus a lot. Plus minus is the point differential when the player is on the floor for his team. So in other words, the average plus differential is that, and when you say that number plus or minus a certain number, that's adjusted for pace, right? So that's plus or minus a certain number of points per what?
It's over the course of a game.
48 minutes?
It's 49 and a half, actually.
49 and a half?
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, great. I'm glad we cleared that up. And adjusted plus minus is a very different formula depending on who's doing it. And that's usually a formula that we don't have access to. But sorry, Chris, go ahead and complete what you were saying about Isaiah. I just wanted to clear that up since we had been throwing that term a lot. And we probably have some new listeners that are more interested in the Sonics
than
we are in numbers. Rob's mom.
So, yeah, he's just one of the better – I mean, by those measures, he's one of the better players on the team. And given the fact that he was a late second-round pick, his contract is very small. He's actually, you know, making less than $1 million this year, and next year is scheduled to make about $880,000. And so kind of the value, you know, relative to the production that he's getting is really, really good. And I, you know, the other thing is I'm not a big believer in intangibles necessarily, but I think that the fact that he had to fight his way into the league, and then once he got into the league, fight his way to basically earn a spot on the roster, and then now fight his way into the starting lineup. Basically, I think he's a guy that had to demonstrate a tremendous amount of work ethic over the course of his career just to get to the point where he's at. And this is a team that, you know, has more than a handful of guys that, you know, while immensely talented, may, you know, could certainly use a little bit more drive and work ethic with how they approach.
So how does he get his points? How is he creating his points?
He's very good off the pick and roll. He's got a great amount of quickness, so he can beat guys off the dribble. He's actually, for his size, you know, he's probably about 5'9", 5'8". He has he's very powerful, has a lot of bounce, and makes a lot of plays actually at the rim. He's kind of in a way, he's like a little small Dwayne Wade, you know, where he can use his quickness and explosiveness to get close to the hoop and shoot over big players. He's got a great runner. And his jump shot's improving, so he doesn't embarrass himself shooting from 3-point range. His defense, you know, while his height is a detriment defensively, and at times guys can shoot over him when he's defending taller shooters from 3-point range, he's got enough strength and power that he doesn't get scored on in the paint very often. So, I mean, overall, that package is like, you know, solid scorer from the point guard position, decent defender, you know, very small salary overall, and a good work ethic. You know, overall, this is a player that, you know, is probably the most valuable guy, you know, on the team, frankly, that combination.
In terms of contract, you mean?
No, just in terms of production and contract, like the total package that he offers is excellent.
The most value. Okay, so including everything.
Yeah.
If all contracts were out, would you take him over, you know, Tyreek and DeMarcus?
So over Tyreek, certainly. Over DeMarcus, you know, that remains to be seen. I mean, the question with DeMarcus, of course, is what's he going to do down the road? You know, this guy, DeMarcus, is the most physically talented player on the team, in my view. But, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty about, you know, if that's actually going to translate into production and when that'll happen. And how much it'll cost.
Right, right. Well, how much do you think it will cost? I mean, how much, if he keeps playing this way, you know, what kind of level of point guard is he? So, you know, this also.
So, I mean, I, with Isaiah, you know, he's, the next 2 years are going to be cheap for him. After that.
Right, he's already signed.
You know, I don't know. I mean, I still think that there's going to be a lot of hesitancy in the NBA to offer a large contract to a guy with his size. You know, it's just the nature of the league, I think. You know, people are going to look at a short guy and think, you know, this guy's, he's just not going to be able to keep this up. You know, so I think My suspicion is that he's going to be affordable moving forward. So he's a guy that maybe, you know, like a $5 million a year guy, you know, like after his rookie deal expires, you know, and that's, you know, that'll be even at $5 million, you know, the production that he's generating, would be, you know, very affordable.
Would it be fair to call him the short man's Ty Lawson, or is that his ceiling?
Well, Ty Lawson's pretty darn short, too. I mean, I think that they're, in a lot of ways...
He's a little shorter than Ty, though. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
I mean, that's when you see them play up against each other, you realize, oh, Isaiah is actually really small.
Yeah. I mean, I think those guys are pretty comparable, yeah. I mean, that's you know, to me, like, that would be a solid comparison. He might also be another guy, of course, is Nate Robinson. So I'd say he's he's like a little less athletic than Nate, but more skilled as a basketball player. So I mean, this
and that's Eastern Conference Player of the Week, Nate Robinson. To you,
do you guys know what Nate's getting contract wise? Because I mean, that would be probably a good model for what we could expect Isaiah to get moving forward.
He's getting $1.1 million this year. So, but Ashley, to
I think probably his last contract to what didn't he sign an extension with the Knicks?
Yeah, originally. So I don't know. Let me look this up. But he got $4 million a year through his kind of his post Knick era. So the year in Boston,
right,
2 years
right.
in OKC. I think that was actually signed while he was a Knick, and then they shipped him out midseason.
So about $4 million. I mean that seems like a reasonable target for Isaiah, I would say. And you say he's worth that, right?
Absolutely. I mean, he's, you know, the fact that he would only be given four would be, in my view, kind of a indication of the bias that, you know, NBA general managers have against guys that are small in stature.
And it's not a totally baseless bias. I mean, the hoop is way up high.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, it's rational. But at the same time, you know, while I was critical of Tyreke Evans because of his lack of productivity over his career, we have to be, you know, if we just look at productivity, we have to basically credit Isaiah Thomas for being consistently productive in the same situation. So while for some freaking reason, whatever Tyreke does, you know, doesn't add up to helping his team score buckets, you know, whatever Isaiah is doing helps his team score buckets.
Well, it's very hard to score while you're holding onto the ball and doing six or seven jab steps in a row.
Yeah.
You almost never score while you're jab stepping.
You know, going back to Isaiah, I think that, you know, he's a guy that he's not going to carry the team, you know, to a title, but he's a very efficient player and he won't cost much. And that's valuable.
And so, and you see him as a foundation piece going forward.
Yeah, I do. Out of the guys they have on the roster now, yeah.
Right. So I've got probably one of the other guys that's, if not a foundation piece, certainly the centerpiece of any big trade this team would do, and that's DeMarcus Cousins. You know, DeMarcus Cousins got thrown out of a game at halftime last night, which, you know, sums up his career in a lot of ways.
It's like getting fired in a day off.
Hey, he made it 24
minutes.
What's
amazing is that he was I was able to watch a little bit of that game. Ironically, since it was on NBA TV, I couldn't watch it on League Pass today. But I saw the highlights of that game, and it seemed like he was playing really well in the first half, but he just couldn't let a couple of things go. He yelled at the ref after the half on the way back to the tunnel and got thrown out. And that sums up a lot of the problems that a lot of people have with him. You know, he's a very immature player. That was his 12th technical foul of the season. But his production's undeniable. You know, right now, his per 36 averages, he's averaging 19.6 and 11.4 rebounds per 36 minutes. You know, he's given just consistent production every night in both of those categories. And so, you know, that's one of the reasons why you see him at the top of all of these, you know, his name is, I guess, been hushed in trade rumors recently, but he was thrown about a lot earlier this season. Chris, you and I have watched him together, and you have a lot of problems with him, though. Can you break down for me the things you hate about DeMarcus's game?
Okay, so I mean, he basically does some things that are infuriating about, you know, when he's on the court, things that you'd think that a professional basketball player wouldn't do. So,
example
is setting a pick. You know, this is a skill. Basically, you stand still with your feet wide apart and don't move. You know, it's like
listen
a pretty
carefully, kids.
Pretty
you just got instructed
simple concept. but he doesn't do that. He likes to he basically almost cringes when the defender approaches him and tries to get out of the way. It basically is, I've thought sometimes that he's afraid of people touching him, actually, when he's on the perimeter setting a pick, which is bizarre, but.
And a ridiculous claim for a professional basketball player. So when you say it's bizarre, you mean your claim that he's afraid of touching people is a bizarre
claim. Yeah, it's a bizarre claim. But, at the same time, I don't know what to think about it because, it really, he doesn't really set good picks,
doesn't. But, when I see those picks, a lot of them are not just from a total lack of contact. He'll drift through players. I think if this was a winning team, he'd get called for a lot more moving screens because especially when he sets a pick on a little guy that he can – essentially hide from the ref, he'll just shuffle him a couple of feet away from the ball.
See, that I actually, that is illegal, and if the refs, were to look closely at him, I think that he would get calls for fouls. But that at least makes me think that he's making an effort to try and...
That's not always how it looks, though. That's not always how it looks.
He's trying to help the team by pushing the opponent, at least I can understand that to some extent. I don't understand the fact that he, how can someone not stand still with their feet spread apart? That to me is confusing.
Well, it's actually, you see a lot of people move their feet when they're setting screens and, people getting away with various forms of laziness in screen setting. But I agree that he's particularly bad and has a habit of just kind of sticking his butt out or drifting away from a screen easily. That might be a maturity issue. It might be him losing focus. I don't know. Rob, you've seen this guy play. What do you think? Do his skills outweigh these issues?
I'm going to say yes, just because I feel like he's young enough that he can be coached in the sense, he's always going to be a little troublesome. He's always going to get stupid technical fouls, but they can be limited with a good coach. Nothing against Keith Smart, but everything against Keith Smart. I think they have the right person there, that teaches him, how to behave and act like an adult on the basketball floor and maybe take slightly fewer jumpers out there.
Yeah, those jumpers, those jumpers are pretty bad. And, to me, sometimes it just looks like he's practicing for his next career. I think he wants to be a certain kind of player and he's just, essentially running drills out there on the floor when he just kind of takes those spot up jumpers, it just seems like he's practicing his Kevin Garnett impression. It can be pretty frustrating. Menzel, how much is he getting paid and for how long?
He is another guy on a rookie contract. This year he is getting 3.8 and he's due for actually a pretty big raise, $4.9 million next year.
But that's still a bargain for a 2010 guy, right? Just from a pure production standpoint.
Well, let's put it this way, they're paying here's four guys that are making more than him this year. Francisco Garcia, Marcus Thornton, John Sammons, we haven't talked about, and Jason Thompson. Those guys are all making more. My big thing with Cousins, though, is obviously the simple comparison for him is Rashid, right?
In what sense?
Why is that?
Well, it is in terms of a very talented basketball player at the power forward position who has some questionable mental habits, I guess you'd say.
Oh, so not like in his game. You just mean in the sort of the early arc of his career.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say, similar also probably to Zach Randolph is who he gets compared to a lot.
Yeah.
That's to me, that's cautionary because basically both of those players rattled around the league for a long time before they settled down and became productive. So they basically burned the first – 2-3 teams that they played on, before they...
That's true. I guess that's the question. I think the big questions for this team going forward is, do we trade DeMarcus or do we make him a centerpiece of this team? And that's something that we're going to get into a little bit more moving forward. But I think we can all agree at this point that DeMarcus is a value for this team. Whether or not you want to commit to him going forward is one of the open questions. Yeah. So that's a question we'll talk about in a little bit. Manziel, wrap us up here. Who's the last player we're going to be looking at? I assume we saved the best for last, right? Who's the superstar we're waiting on here?
Well, it's a four-time college player of the year, Marcus Thornton.
What?
Wait, he didn't get college player of the year four times.
No one ever has.
I thought he got it 5 times. He got it his redshirt season too.
I believed Mandel for. What are you talking about?
Marcus Thornton is a pretty pure 2 guard.
So pure.
You know, in terms of his size and the types of shots he's doing this year, you know, looking at his shooting chart, he's done a much better job of cutting down a long twos. Instantly, when I think of Marcus Thornton, the guy I think of is coming off a screen, taking one dribble, and pulling up from 18 feet for an angle jump shot.
Yeah.
Just looking at the shot chart, I can tell you that that is happening less. He's shooting a lot more three-pointers. His effective field goal percentage this season is .481, and his true shooting is .511. So for a predominantly outside shooting guard, I think those are pretty good numbers. Although they are down from his first 2 seasons with Sacramento.
Well, and also when you bring up 3-pointers, his high in 3-pointers taken was his rookie season with the Hornets. He almost got to that number last year, but he really has not been making it a focal point of his game. Do you think it should be?
No, you know, his 3-point attempts actually. I'm not sure what number you're looking at. I'm looking at per game. And
I'm just looking at totals.
Okay. Yeah, so he had 117 his rookie year, but he was taking 4.3 per game. He's taken more than that in each of the 3 seasons with Sacramento. And this season, he's actually at his low per game, but he's at his career apex in terms of per 36 minutes.
I guess last year those per game would be higher since that was a 66-game season. Yeah.
One thing I noticed, though, like you mentioned with Jimmer, and I'd probably see this if you looked at Isaiah Thomas as well, is the number of corner threes that he's shooting. And, you know, 345, that's his three-point rate. He's a career 360 three-point shooter. You know, that's a guy generally you will trust to take a good amount of threes. He's shooting a very low number of corner threes. This makes you think that this is a problem with the team more so than the shot choices by the players, and that they're not moving the ball, and that's how you get, you know, that's how you get the corner threes. They're not doing it. The shots aren't there.
Right. I mean, certainly you got to work to get a corner three, and that's, you know, discipline on offense is not this team's specialty right now. I'm sorry, Seattle, if we're, you know, bringing you down here, but look, you're getting a team. So
yeah, I mean, we've also ignored the, you know, the next 6 or 7 worst players and all these guys tonight.
Yeah, but, you know, look, these guys, you know, we're not over the moon about very many of these guys. I mean, I'm pretty excited about a few of them, and I think that Tyreek's ceiling is a lot higher than maybe even Chris thinks it is, although obviously Chris is a huge fan. But, you know, these are all, they're all a bunch of solid players, and some of them are even very good values. So, you know, you're not inheriting a franchise that's, you know, underwater or in total disarray.
Yeah.
Although when you watch them, you wouldn't know that all the time.
I mean, I actually think the disarray aspect of, you know, what happens this season down in Sacramento, we might be underrating. I mean, my thought when I watch these guys play, I think, boy, they do not look organized, and the defense looks very bad. And, you know, there's a lot of talent on this roster. Like, I know that. I mean, I've been saying, you know, some harsh things about a few of these players, but these guys are really good basketball players. You know, if things gelled and they got settled down and the coaching staff, you know, somehow were able to right the ship, you know, these guys could win a lot more games. I really believe that.
You're right.
And I agree.
And so Chris, you know, let's talk about that. I mean, if I was to have the power to fire Keith Smart and make you the head coach today, and you had to make some coaching decisions, I mean, what would you do? What would be your base set? I mean, what's the kind of your bread and butter offensive play for this roster?
So, I mean, these guys, when I watch them play, I just see a lack of fundamentals, you know? So a lot of times just, you know, guys staying between their opponent and the basket, you know, they don't do that as well as they should, you know, getting into an offensive set early, you know, passing the ball around effectively, you know, working it to try and get an open shot. They don't do a very good job of that either. And so
given their strengths though, what should they be doing? I mean, we know what they do wrong, but what do you think with the talent they have, what kind of plays should they be running?
So the guys that they have on the roster, in my view, would be similar to maybe what Memphis rolls out. So this isn't going to be a really, hyper-efficient jump shooting team. This also isn't, you know, especially with DeMarcus Cousins on the floor, this isn't going to be a team that really excels in the open court. They're going to want to play power basketball. They're going to want to play in half-court sets. And, you know, I think if they can kind of embrace a defensive mindset, they'll play a grinded-out style similar to what Memphis has.
You know, certainly DeMarcus is capable of creating buckets there on his own in the paint. And sometimes Jason Thompson, he's pretty good at it too. So it's not a bad idea, right, going forward.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you got basically the guys that you have playing in the front court. So Cousins, Thompson, and Robinson, you know, those three guys, none of them really are particularly effective at taking jumpers from outside. So these guys are all going to want to play close to the basket. You know, I think Cousins has the talent to basically get deep post position and draw a double team and kick it out. He doesn't do that often enough right now. I'm assuming that this is because the coaching sucks, but, you know, who knows? He may not, you know, I don't know if he sees the value in that play necessarily. It's a little bit the fit on this team, you know, in my mind, it's a little hard. I mean, again, they're unfortunately similar to Memphis too. Memphis, while Memphis had Rudy Gay, and that kind of their main athletic two-guard outside, which is Tyreke Evans, you know, over the course of his career hasn't been in a prolific three-point threat. Tyreke Evans is a guy that really likes – he would flourish, I believe, in a team situation that played more transition ball. So my feeling is that based on the strength of DeMarcus Cousins, which is basically half-court, kind of traditional post-type play, he's kind of going to play at odds to some extent with Tyreke. So my feeling is that, you know, I would try and get, for this season at least, Tyreke is going to have to just, you know, kind of swallow a system that doesn't suit him that well and try and play half court ball. I'd say that in the next year or two, maybe Tyreke will move on to another team, either as a free agent or, from trade. And then the team, you know, basically the team, Sacramento could look to try and fill the roster out with guys that can shoot a little bit more efficiently from outside.
It seems that that's the conventional wisdom that either Tyreke or DeMarcus will be leaving this team, that it's more likely to be Tyreke. Rob, do you think that Tyreke should be the one to go, or would you build around him?
Oh, man. I would... you know, we're going to have a new owner soon. So I think if I were the owner, I would base it off of what I can get from the two. If they have the same return, I'd probably hold on to Boogie. Because I just think there's more, you know, he's younger. He hasn't been in the league as long. And I think there's more potential with him. But I like...
Rob, I got a question for you. Do you know what the value of Boogie is? I mean, just in terms of if he were to be traded, like what would the return on that trade be?
I mean, I hear trade rumors, you know, and I go through the NBA trade machine, and I found a way to get LeBron from the Heat for the entire Kings roster. But you know, it's really hard to say because his contract's so low right now. So,
yeah, I mean hunch is that he's very valuable as a trade chip.
Yeah, he's more valuable than Tyreke, but
yeah, DeMarcus is certainly the most valuable trade chip they have.
Do you know what?
Although
he is, Scott?
He's also a risk. I'm having trouble right now remembering the names that have been tossed about earlier this season for him. You know, I remember Boston wanting him and people talking about a pretty unrealistic trade for I want to say Courtney Lee and Jeff Green.
What?
There's no trade Sacramento should make with Boston unless Rondo is involved.
Sure. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen. I'm just trying to remember some of the names that were out there. Maybe I'm misremembering that. But, yeah. You know, like Rob said, you know, he doesn't make a lot of money, so he sort of has to be a part of a bigger trade if you want to try to get value for him.
Yeah.
Most of the trades earlier that were discussed earlier were three-team trades, actually.
Right. That makes sense.
I would hold on to Boogie, I think.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, let's talk about what the foundation is. I'm gonna skip ahead, and we'll come back to draft picks in a minute. Menzel, if you're running the team, you take over. I want you to tell me the two or three guys on this roster that you see as long-term Sonics.
I think you have to roll the dice with Cousins and try to make that work, just because the ceiling for a very effective big man like him with his skills is so much higher than, you know, even Tyreek's ceiling.
Yeah, I agree.
To me, it's like I look at the roster and kind of like Isaiah Thomas, to me, he is a, you know, a valuable bench guy, but a bench guy nonetheless. Jason Thompson,
I think he can start.
Situation. Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of in between there. Jason Thompson, again, he's a rotation big man.
Yeah, agree.
Jimmer is a specialist player.
So you think those four guys?
I mean,
So who? Give me your two or three. You got DeMarcus in there. Who else?
I would just say, you know, him and Thomas Robinson. Really, if you go away from Tyreek, which I think should be the play.
So you're not including Isaiah in your core.
No, he might be a, you know, he's a core like William Blomquist from the core Mariner.
No way, dude. He's top 12 point guard in the league.
No, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's between 10 and 12 right there.
He's a sometimes starter for one of the worst teams in the league.
Chris, do you agree that IT is in the 10 to 12 range, and would you include him in your core?
I mean, we discussed this very heavily last week, so I'll just say that I think he's probably better than top 10 right now, or you can make a case for it at least. I mean, in my view, I see him as being a value player on the team moving forward. So, I mean, he's based on what I suspect his contract will be in his production. So, I mean, you know, you need guys like that on the roster. He's not a superstar. He's not going to help the team win a championship. But what he lets, you know, what he'll let the future Sonics do is overspend at other positions. So, I mean, I think IT is a super important player. I also love Thomas Robinson. I really like him. I think that he's going to be a great player moving forward. And I think, Jason Thompson, you know, again, isn't a superstar. He may actually be even an average player in the league, but signed to the contract that he has, you know, that's a solid signing. You know, the biggest question mark for me, I don't know how to deal with it, but, you know, DeMarcus Cousins is the most talented player on the roster. He's the guy that has...
But you're not including him in your core.
I'm not. He's, you know, I call him, like, the big question mark. You know, like, I don't know. He could be in the core, or he could disappear. You know, he's like the Joker, you know, like, I don't know. You know, he's the most talented guy on the team. If he pulls it together, you know, he could be dominant. But at the same time, like, the things that you see from him, you know, in terms of how he plays, his lack of defense, his basically the stupid shit that he does all the time when he plays, his ability to get in trouble with his own coaches and like refs and other players, you know, even sideline announcers, you know, this does not bode well, you know, in my view, for him turning things around quickly.
Do you think you should wear that suit like Matthew Lesko?
What was that?
Matthew Lesko is the guy with the question marks on all his suits. That's going to show you how to get money from the government.
Free money from the government.
He should do that. That'd be awesome.
I hear all those things that you're saying about Boogie, and yet, you know, when I'm building my core, I'm definitely including him. So, you know, if I'm looking at my core, I'm saying, and this is going to be unpopular, but my core would be Boogie, IT, and I had previously said Jason Thompson, but I'm going to say Tyreek. I think you try and keep Tyreek at a reasonable price and bring in, you know, a good organization and good personnel around them and try to make that work. Because the upside there is enormous, in my opinion. And I realize that their styles don't fit right now, but if you can, you know, kind of put a good system in place around them teach them how to run plays together, I think they can do it.
So I could see that. Actually, I totally agree with you 100%.
The odds are against it working.
Yeah, my thought is that, you know, the way that Cousins is right now is like we're not going to see that sort of his potential condense into being, you know, translated on the court, I think, in the next 3 or 4 years. So, I mean...
Well, you see it translated on the court in him being a 2010 guy, though. I mean, you're right that he's not the dominant player that he could be, but there's still no doubt that he's a very productive player despite all these issues.
You know, so, I mean, I'm looking at his production solid, you know, but I also think, you know, were he not on the court, if another guy was on that court, I'm not sure the production would be, you know, I don't know how much production loss the team would actually experience. By that, I mean, if you just look at his plus-minus numbers, you know, he's not really, he's not bringing, like, superstar or even really good production to the team. And my expectation.
So his raw plus minus is plus two.
Yeah, right, he's plus two. And if we go back to, you know, last year when he was a rookie in the league, you know, he was a solid player. He's one of the better players on the team. He was actually plus four. But, you know,
the Kings as a whole are minus 7.2 per game. So plus two sounds really good.
I'm looking at a just plus minus for last year.
Okay.
So that should basically remove the bias for the team basically being terrible. He's at plus four from last year. I mean, my thought is he showed as a rookie that he was pretty dang good on this team, you know. And, you know, his raw plus minus last year, if we look at it, he was plus 3.3. So I guess we see that the adjusted and the raw agree in this case. So I don't know. I guess I'm kind of talking in circles a little bit. We see that he's a positive contributor to the team. I agree with that.
Agreed. I totally agree with you. Do we have everyone's core guys?
Yeah, we did.
All right.
Can I just pitch an alternate scenario, though? I mean, this is just a very hypothetical, but what if, you know, what if they were to trade him for a really, like a bunch of picks, you know, like second round picks, first round picks, a couple young players? I mean, I don't know what value Cousins has on the open market, but my thought would be that if other teams covet him for his abilities, you know, it may be easier to ship him out and rebuild with new picks than it would be to basically wait for him to realize his potential.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, this team does need a lot of draft picks, right? I mean, this is a good time to get into that and, you know, as a way to answer that question. The coming year, the team has their first round draft pick. Unless they somehow claw their way into the playoffs by going undefeated the rest of the season, as well as their second draft pick. But Chris, things are looking a little grim in the second round in the years going forward, right?
Oh yeah, it's brutal. I mean, they missed their, basically they traded their two second round picks away in 2014, their second rounder in 2015, their second rounder in 2016, and their second rounder in 2017. So, I mean,
but second round picks, let's be real. They're second round picks.
Well, I mean, Isaiah Thomas is the last pick in the draft. There's value in the second round if you draft.
There is some value, but I looked at the second round picks from 2005 to 2009, and there is an average of 4 point something players still in the league from second round picks. 4 out of the 32.
Sure. That, I mean, that's probably about, I mean, that makes sense, but that doesn't mean you don't need the draft. I mean,
and only one is good, and that's Marc Gasol. I mean, there are very,
okay,
very,
but in recent
few,
I mean, you know, Isaiah Thomas, DeJuan Blair, there are always examples of guys you can get for a good
Rashard
value.
Lewis, those like around his way out of,
yeah, but you're right. It's not those are not the, it's not the end of the world.
Chandler Parsons.
Chandler Parsons.
Chris, don't even turn on Chandler Parsons right now.
I turned on this guy big time. I know you hate this, but basically, like, that guy.
I don't hate it at all. I love it.
I know you love it.
Let's not get into
Chandler
Parsons.
So wrong
right
about
now.
Him.
Let's not get into Chandler Parsons right now, guys. Let's talk about the draft situation going forward. You know, Manziel, do you think it would make sense to trade DeMarcus or anyone else to try to shore up the shots that we take in the draft over the next few years?
I would not do that. I don't think you can get enough picks to really make it worth it. And you're trading a guy who you know at least can play. And you hope can still play at a very high level, which I think is the reputation around the league. I don't think you can, like, if you could get 3 first rounders over the next 2 seasons, then maybe. But I think that's a...
What did you say?
If you get 3 first rounders over the next, say, 2 seasons, then I might consider it. But I don't think that is out there.
Yeah, if you could get the 3 first rounders, I mean, are you talking about DeMarcus Cousins for 3 first rounders?
I'm 100% with Manziel. Like, I think that is probably one of the only. If you're trading him for picks, that's pretty much all I would trade him for.
To give you an example,
but
how
do you
that
think
can happen,
there's any chance you could get?
I actually do, which sounds crazy. I mean,
if
I
you
think...
remember the lead up to the Dwight Howard trade last season, there was a plan in place, and I think this trade was basically agreed to, and then got derailed somehow. That involved Gerald Wallace leaving Portland, and Portland would basically cash in 4 first rounders as part of a bigger trade for Dwight Howard that put him in LA. So, you know, that can happen.
That doesn't sound right to me. So you're saying they were giving up Gerald Wallace and getting 4 first round picks?
Yeah.
That doesn't sound right to me. I guess.
Wait, what, Menzo?
Well, let's not focus on that right now. You know, Chris, would you agree with that assessment? I mean, you got to roll with Boogie over the draft picks.
You know, I don't know. I mean, my view is there's like different ways to rebuild the team. You know, that's kind of what why I was asking you guys what you thought about Jason Thompson. You know, earlier on in the show is basically if you can trust that Jason Thompson and Thomas Robinson can hold down the front court, then Cousins may be expendable. You could actually like flip Cousins. So, I mean, one strategy that could be employed is flip Cousins for picks, roll out Thompson's and Robinson in the front court, and just say, you know what, we're going to keep Tyreek Evans. We're going to play nasty defense. We're going to turn the ball over. We're going to run and get out in transition. And we're just going to be an up and down the court, run and gun team. And, you know, we don't need that heavy set. DeMarcus Cousins waddling up and down the court, you know, slowing us down.
Not heavy set, not a waddler, but he is a shuffler.
Shuffling. So, I mean, there's basically like you can see scenarios, you know, like if they could get the right trade for DeMarcus, that, you know, I would embrace that and I would actually take back all the bad things I said about Tyreek Evans and I would keep him on the team. You know, and that.
If only you could take them back and we weren't publishing them for the world.
Yeah, yeah.
And the world will know.
So, I mean, there's a lot of ways that they could, you know, in my view, there's a lot of paths to success. And I think that DeMarcus doesn't necessarily, I mean, he's a component of a lot of them, but he could also be a component of them by garnering picks instead.
Sure. Well, the other good news about the draft as we're wrapping this up is that, you know, this team's going to get a high draft pick the next couple of years, I think. Even with positive momentum next year, I think they're going to be in the lottery at least next year.
Yeah.
And with the Western Conference being as it is, probably for a little while after that. But don't worry, Seattle. Kevin Durant has to die eventually.
Yeah,
or retire.
That's right.
Yeah. You pull a Jim Brown is my hope.
All right, guys. Well, you know, any closing thoughts here? Anything you want to say about this team coming to Seattle before we wrap things up?
All their bags are packed. They're ready to go. Sayonara, Kings. Time for green and gold. It's time for the big move to the Empire City. So all you hardcore fans from Sacramento, we're very sorry that David Stern is a hoe. Peyton to Kemp is now IT to Boogie. So F me, that sounds real bad. It won't be the same, but we're no longer sad. Bring the NBA back to our amazing city. It's time to go. Sacramento, no more suing, David Stern is still a hoe. He won't give you a break cause he is very douchey. So you're leaving on a jet plane. Don't know if you'll be back again, probably not. It's great to be back, I can't wait to go to the game. So bring back the Supersonics. Celebrate and have some gin and tonic. Let's send IT to the NBA Hall of Fame.
Oh, dude.
Man.
So good.
Another masterpiece. I can safely say that's definitely better than the John Denver version.